we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Does real scientific inquiry require dissent? That is the question that we are asking tonight on America Out Loud Pulse. Again, does real scientific inquiry, the ability for us to evaluate phenomena, does it require there to be someone that dissents from our postulate in the room? Again, that's something in the recent days, especially as we have been having a tyranny of the oligarchs that rule our social media platforms as well as our news agencies that only have one Delphi, the Oracle of Delphi, promulgating their message, and they are restricting the ability for anybody to offer dissent or just even a differing opinion. And in fact, what they call these people are uncredentialed. They call them unreliable, and they call them promulgating misinformation. So again, does real science or real discovery or real advances in things like medicine require someone in the room to dissent, to further the inquiry? And I'm going to ask that question to Stuart Tankersley, who is here tonight as well.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are. Thank you again, Jordan. Great to be with you and our audience. I think this is a very timely question for the obvious reasons. The Elon Musk attempt to take over Twitter this week. Who knows what will happen from that? But his justification for doing it, I think, is revelatory for our situation as well. As you know, we have several times in the last couple of years challenged the narrative that has been forcibly coerced on our country, not just on the physicians. Yet, if there is any dissent, they're immediately shut down, as Twitter will do at any point for political or science reasons. I think several of the issues that we're going to be talking about are going to be dealing with the science of COVID. And once again, like we hope to always do, look at the medical industrial complex's abuse of their authority and the unfortunate injury to patients and humanity at large.
So, Stuart, you know, one of the words that I've been evaluating recently, and it was actually in an article I was reading, was a word called mendacity. And mendacity, classically, I think what I learned back when I was in high school was to just say that that's somebody who's untruthful. But the more I evaluate the, you know, kind of the actual meaning of the word, it's not only untruthful, but it's a mixture of kind of dishonesty, hypocrisy, and audacity. And I think, especially this week, as we heard somebody in our local community on a local program talking in a way that was authoritative, but in a way that was not always truthful, the words that came to my mind thinking of that person was mendacious or speaking with mendacity. And I think that's an interesting term as we think about the arbiters of what we would call our scientific or medical authority and what they've been saying in the interim, especially since most of their predictions and most of their proclamations have continued to be less than right. and the way they have come back to them is to continue to say something even different and say that they didn't mean that initially, or even say that they didn't mean to take that drug or suggest that drug, and now they regret taking that drug. Again, these people, as they continue to appear in front of the public, I question, first of all, their ability to, you know, self-evaluate, but secondly, how mendacious it is that they do that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's based in pride for sure. And mendacious to me, in my way of looking at it in the past, is always, it's not just being untruthful, but it's more of a, from a point of superiority, dictating something that others must receive as fact. It's an arrogance, like you may have mentioned. Yet when you look at this individual's past over the last little over 2 years of public statements, you see many, many misstatements and facts that he proclaimed that did not turn out to be true. And that's just within the first 25 months of this ordeal, this horrendous catastrophe. But as always, we're coming at this from the perspective these people are not our enemies. We are sincerely seeking dialogue and truth. We want to come at them with questions. Of course, we're never allowed to ask and get answers. In fact, we are they are shielded from our questions. Time and time, it's been going on for over 2 years now. And when they do get cornered, they just take the questions and we'll consider and we'll consider and we'll consider and will not give answers or respond. As scientists have always, as we have historically been very good at. So something's gone terribly wrong in our culture that's allowed for this catastrophe to be promulgated and continued. And for an example, if you look at our position on the vaccines is appalling, that given the data dump that occurred at the beginning of March from the internal documents of the FDA and Pfizer, it showed that within 10 weeks of the release of the vaccine, that they had almost 1,300 known types of adverse events with over 4,200 humans, people, individuals harmed, over 1,000 deaths within 10 weeks. Yet the person that was working for the FDA, the authority over the people, the guy that should be the head guy overseeing the oversight for the country against the producer, for the, in this case, Pfizer, he was intricately involved in the deception that led to the release and the approval of more and more unfortunate EUA products. In fact, he was supposed to be a sworn witness at the hearing that I was involved in, federal hearing I was involved in over a month ago, and he did not show, even though he was invited by the federal judge after giving an affidavit. But his affidavit was a month before he probably realized that the data dump would reveal this 38-page document that's been widely distributed. Unfortunately, it's not been distributed by the mainstream media, as we know, who have been compromised. And as a side note on that, I was appalled in the last week or two with Dr. Robert Malone and the exposure of the abuse he has taken from the New York Times and their hit piece on him. But I digress. Sorry. But the whole point in all this is there is no questioning of authority there. And we need to back up and say, what in the world are we trapped in? And it's what you and I were discussing before the call, before the show, and that is the use of the word authority in medicine.
Yeah.
What do
exactly.
you think?
I will say, you know, one of the things authoritarians typically insist that we, you know, the average person practice the logical fallacy known as an appeal to authority. And so the reason we're using that word authority is probably the problem in itself. You know, again, we must, as our authority is the CDC, anything that goes against them is wrong. But in reality, that's a logical fallacy, because science, the arbiter of authority is not where the actual facts come from. They a lot of times are just the person or entity given power in society, but it doesn't mean that that entity or person can't be wrong. But when you appeal to that person as the authority, and that authority cannot receive dissent, then really those institutions, or just in general, that inquiry or solution is stopped in its tracks and will never be found. Because of that, you know, what PhD or what medical thesis have you ever had that all the people in there, last time I checked, it was called defending your thesis. And I'm not sure you would defend it against proponents of your thesis. You would defend it against dissenters, correct? Correct, Stuart?
Right. That's how scientific method operates. I've always been taught. And it's just amazing that we are not allowed, because the authorities, those who have usurped the authority that we have as individual professionals, because we have bequeathed upon them the responsibilities that we are obligated to maintaining.
And then, rather,
you know, it's interesting in this, going back to the hearing that I mentioned 5 weeks ago that I was a witness in. This is going to test the authority of our judicial system as well, because I have unfortunately been under the belief the last year and a half or so that with the one-sided mandates and one-sided voice that is pounded in everybody's head, that eventually there're going to be evidentiary hearings. And we are just hopeful that these evidentiary hearings will seek to maintain a truthfulness and a diligence about what responsibility, freedom, and authority are all about, because this is a very important issue that will be a test of our judicial and medical system at large.
Yeah, and I am hopeful and prayerful that the judges don't take the stance that obviously authoritarians do, where they say, well, the authority has spoken, therefore anything that, like, again, I think even when you were in the hearing, one of the lawyers, you know, again, treated the CDC's statements as scientific facts. And I think the problem is that belies what is really science and what are facts. Again, the CDC is a body. We know, at least all of us obviously know, in the last 2 years, the CDC has been incorrect multiple times, flipping and flopping and flipping and flopping on their opinion. And actually, the question is, they've been given authority. The question would be, do they deserve it? And then at that point, if they deserve our authority, why can't they withstand dissent or questioning of their statements? And I think, again, that's what was so shocking, I think, in your evidentiary hearing that you had, was that the opposing counsel could even think that the CDC's website might contain errors, or even the things that they state might be proven wrong after the fact, which is what we deal with every day as physicians. Medicines we use, things we did. I'd say my dad's famous quote was, half the things in my medical book are wrong, we just don't know which half. Is a good, you know, summation of what the reality of dealing with people, science, and just in general, intuitions versus empirical facts.
Yeah, so we're getting, once again, back to the same theme of freedom and responsibility, and ultimately the individual needing, in the responsible roles, needing to have humility. And it's amazing how there is none. I don't know if I've told you this story, but a good friend of mine who is a PhD in history was at the Ohio State University getting his PhD, and one of his professors had been invited for a few years every year to come to the first day of the medical students at their up there and give them a 30-minute talk. And invariably what he would talk about was, what are y'all doing to people now that 50 years from now, people will not will think that they are, is ludicrous. What, in other words, you better have a humility about how you approach your profession in this very important endeavor of caring for other humans. Unfortunately, after 4 or 5 years of doing that, he was disinvited because he was offensive to the incoming medical students. Once again, another clear indicator of the lack of wisdom and the hubris that seems so pervasive throughout our culture.
Yeah, and the one other thing is, I think even our profession, if you hear some of our authorities with italics over them talk, what they say is to really be free, or to exert real freedom, would be to get vaccinated, right? Or these other things, to say that'll get you free again. But I think it's a perversion of the word freedom. And I think the word freedom, I guess in Hayek's book, was, freedom from coercion, freedom from the arbitrary power of other men, and release from the ties which left the individual no choice but obedience to the orders of a superior to whom he was attached. And the problem is we've misplaced that word freedom with something that a new freedom, a freedom from a necessity, a release from the compulsion of circumstances. So again, that's not the freedom that we desire. The freedom we want is the original freedom, which is freedom from coercion and the freedom to be able to do what we as individuals want to do. And the reality throughout history, at least the last 150 years, is doing that is what has made the advances and made the changes in society that have led to great discoveries, that have led to wondrous findings, that have led to overall.
Exactly what we were talking about was revealed this week, I think, again. And the wording that is used now for this occurrence that we've been imposed on us, that I doubt I've ever heard outside of prison in our country's history, was Dennis Prager had a podcast this week on the unbelievable early evidence of the damage done by the mass lockdowns of our culture, of our country. Who in the world 20 years ago would have thought that our government would have had the hubris to impose lockdowns like we've had to endure? And unfortunately, the young have suffered the greatest.
You've been in that situation. The person next to you is sniffling, or worse yet, coughing. Flu, cold, and coronaviruses are everywhere. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to reduce these threats with an invisible mask as an additional layer of protection? Sold by hundreds of pharmacists and medical doctors, our American-made povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray, Cofix RX, lasts for hours deactivating viruses and germs while protecting you from airborne pathogens that make us sick. America Out Loud listeners get 20% off. Use Cofix RX while in large groups, while traveling, or for any other type of high-risk situation as an additional layer of protection to help reduce your likelihood of catching a cold, the flu, or SARS-CoV-2 viruses. Right now, America Out Loud listeners get 20% off of all orders. Click our banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for 6 incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both on the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
We are back. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and we had just been talking about what it meant to dissent and what that looked like and how, over the last 2 years, that dissent, whether it was this dissent on the vaccine's effectiveness, whether it was dissent on the lockdown's effectiveness, whether it was dissent on what our medical establishment was doing to the citizens of our country, or for that much, as a medical authority worldwide, what it was doing to the rest of the world. And I think it came to be even more evident to me that this was not of concern to most adults when I, as a father of a kindergartner, decided to go before the Mountain Brook Board of Education and question their usages of masks in school, especially in the elementary school. My child obviously was a kindergartner. As you know, most of you know, kindergarten as well as elementary school is a dynamic time for a human's brain. It is a time for acquisition of language, acquisition of learning, acquisition of the ability to tell facial recognition, acquisition of speech patterns. My wife's a speech pathologist. She will tell you she cannot do speech pathology work without visualizing the mouth and the tongue and the movement of that as the child makes and creates words. So I went before the Board of Education not to say that masks don't work. Instead, I went and said, I will give you that stipulation that you believe. Whether I believe it or not is not the issue here. But let's take their statement, especially from the infectious disease experts. Again, experts is a questionable word in this thing because they obviously know their own literature, which doesn't prove that it has any true efficacy, much less have they ever tried it in pediatrics. Because by the way, to do it in a pediatric population would be unethical. Therefore, they are unable to study it. And my question actually was, if it's unethical to study, maybe it is unethical. But regardless, I did stipulate that let's assume that these masks work. My question was, every intervention has benefits and it has harms. And my question was, what are the harms of masking a child during the most dynamic period of his life and acquisition of language and facial recognition for 18 months? And the answer that I got was silence. And it was silence because not one of them had evaluated that. Again, maybe masking a child for 2 weeks doesn't have deleterious effects. But what they had done was taken a 2-week masking and extended it. I mean, we're talking about a kindergartner. We're talking about almost half his life. If you started in kindergarten, March of 2020, half his life had been spent in a mask, and 100% of his academic formal education had been spent in a mask. And no one had an answer on how this affects not only their psyche, not only their mental state, but also their education. And the funny thing is, as we talk about dissent, I was not allowed to say that. I actually had professors from the academic university in our town come and speak against me. But again, dissent is needed because guess in the end what dissent produced. And now it's just common knowledge that this may have been one of the dumbest and most harmful things we have ever done to our society, especially our children.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, of course, we've known from the beginning that the children are not threatened by this virus. Yet they're going to impose this restriction. We're going to abuse these children because they can, because they're the authorities. They're going to harm these children. And then the complete opposite occurrence. I'm backing away from that part of it to just reflect on the insanity of the past 2 years. So in one case, children who are not threatened by this virus and do not transmit it in schools, that gives, that's the excuse the education associations use throughout the country.
Yeah, to maintain Stuart, we control. We had great right. studies on the fact that they did not transmit this virus.
That's right.
Within yep. April of 2020 from right. England and Ireland. Right. There was no question. It was not like, oh, well, we don't know that. No, we knew that. We knew that.
Right. And so on the other side of the insanity equation, you have one of these leading national figures who resides in our state, and he gets sick. This was right at 2 years ago. He gets sick. He gets COVID. He takes hydroxychloroquine. He gets better. And he pins a letter in the on a major website in our state apologizing that he took it. Now, I don't know about you, Jordan, but in 25
and
years,
by the way, in his paper, he says he knows it didn't help him.
Right. So let's get this straight. So I've never had in 25 years of practice, never had a patient once have an issue. I gave them a medicine for that issue. They didn't have any side effects. And then they got better. And then they resented it that they took it. I've never even considered a patient having that perspective. Yet I guess when you are this wise and all-knowing, and when
here's the funny thing is
Would you do it?
The same people are the ones that thank the vaccine when they get the virus for making it not as bad as it might have been. So again, there's the cognitive dissonance there. I'm sorry I took this medicine. It had no side effects. I'm through it. Yet when there's a failure of the product they push, they thank that product for its unknown efficacy.
Yeah, it's insane. It's just absolutely, there is no accountability of their arrogance is the ultimate sad predicament we find ourselves in. And so when, like, for example, they now say, remember, CDC swore from the beginning that FDA swore from the beginning these vaccines are completely safe, completely effective. Now we know they are not completely safe, and they are far from safe and far from effective. And yet they continue to move the goalpost. And now the United States is a unique country. But I don't think the human science of things is so unique that in America alone, your risk of dying after getting infected from if you've been vaccinated is one-tenth that of being if you were not vaccinated. Because other countries find very different results.
Yeah, that's true. I think if you look at it, the data that we push here, not we as in it's the Royal Medical Authority, it is unlike any other country. And I will tell you, our country is not necessarily the healthiest country in terms of weight and all the other risk factors that are there. But it seems to be that the data itself, and I will tell you, even the CDC has admitted that they have not released all the data, even when they claim they did. And they didn't release it because it might lead to questioning or hesitancy about a product. And again, that should go back to the problem with these agencies is that in defense of the indefensible, they are withholding information. And all that does is create more hesitancy than revealing the information and allowing people to feel that they are being honestly spoken to. And I will tell even my son today, the thing that he did is not as bad as the lie that went along with it. It's another classic example of when that it's almost like our institutions don't even understand that their credibility, I guess the problem with it is their credibility is now defended by people who shouldn't defend it. Because again, some of the things they've done are indefensible.
Now, of course, several things. Most things I would say that they have done has been indefensible. And but with you, you have the responsibility of loving your child and disciplining your child. But if you were not a responsible adult, you would have handled it completely different. These people have no responsible adults above them because they are supposedly the only adults in the room. And it's you just mentioned, and we're going to continue to update this, as we've said before, the poor health may account for some of the deaths of Americans. General poor health may account for some of the high number of deaths in our country.
But you I will and I say, know it, that at is least not. Historically, our medical innovation and the things that we've always had usually make up for that.
Yeah, you're right, right.
And so in this particular case, it hasn't.
Right, because guess what our number is this week, according to Johns Hopkins mortality data? We are, out of 185 countries, the mortality rate this week, we dropped a point. We're now 18th highest mortality versus last week's 19th. We are absolutely failing our populace, our patients, our countrymen in this endeavor, in this challenge, in this catastrophe. And we refuse. They put themselves in a corner, and it's really going to be a spiritual conviction on their part, I believe, that's going to take them to repent from their hubris and say, wait a minute, how could we have such horrible numbers? Maybe we've not done things properly. And I think if that happens, we are willing and joyfully helping them come along and looking at the science like they were trained, they should have been trained to do decades ago. But they have got to stop disseminating their own data that benefits them while the country, our country, fails in dealing with this virus.
Well, one of the things I was reading this week was just talking about, the tyranny of the enlightened experts. And it is one thing that I had not actually realized, the politician and the government expert receive their revenues not from service voluntarily purchased on the market, but from a compulsory levy on the populace. These officials, therefore, wholly lack the pecuniary incentive to care about serving the public properly and competently. And what is more, the vital criterion of fitness is very different in the government and on the market. In the market, the fittest are the most able to serve the consumers. In government, the fittest are those most adept at wielding coercion and are those most adroit at making demagogic appeals to the voting public. And again, I will ask, when I read this, Anthony Fauci, et cetera, our state health official, Scott Harris, just jumped in my mind. That's exactly what's happened. It's, again, not a care for the people, but they are the most adept at coercing people and then putting fear in people to obtain their power. And I think that, again, we have to change that.
Yeah. By the way, I'm going to take a quick time out. You mentioned Scott Harris, our state health officer. It's been revealed this past week in the papers and things that he has COVID. And I want to just let the people know that our group has prayed for Dr. Harris in hopes that he will heal completely and quickly, and that he will have no long haulers or any problems from this virus. He is not our enemy. I'm glad you mentioned his name, because I would have forgot.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. Again, I think some of the people that are in power, not necessarily even the people I think on the school board in Mountain Brook, some of them did not realize what they were getting themselves into and what they were going to have to address in the midst of their service time. So I think sometimes a lot of these men and a lot of these leaders are not necessarily expecting to have to make tough decisions and also take risky, or what I would say difficult or decisions that might cause them to be put in the limelight.
Yeah.
It's coward. I mean, I think there's cowards a lot of times in these positions of power. And I think a lot of times it's very difficult. I don't question for a second that what me and you have had to go through, Stuart, requires some gumption and some intestinal fortitude. But the reality is it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do. But when you're put in a position of authority that you've not been trained to deal with that catastrophe, with the challenge before you, and you are told from whoever that this is what you have to do, this is what you have to do, and you don't have the training to stop and say, wait a minute, does that comport with what my training has led me to believe to be the right course of action? What type of culture allows for their leaders to assume responsibility when they've never had training for it? It's really ultimately an indictment of who we are and, of course, of our profession in this catastrophe. But it's very unfortunate that we haven't had.
Well, it also goes back trained. To who vetted this leader. I mean, I would throw that back on our medical association that actually is the people that put him in power. Would be what kind of vetting did they do? What kind of analysis did they do in the event that he was called upon to be someone who had to make difficult decisions that involved people's lives and people's livelihoods? Could he do it?
Yeah. And on the surface, you would, Dr. Harris is a brilliant man who is an infectious disease trained. He has a master's in public health. You would hope, be one of the people at the table to help formulate ideas, thoughts, and courses of action. But then when he is given the role of leading in a catastrophe that he has never had training for whatever reason, the people in charge didn't have the humility to say, wait, let's help him. Let's put him in a situation that helps everybody. He was forced into that situation, and what did he instinctively do? And this was, I know, very frustrating for several of our very high-ranking legislative and executive leaders in our state, is that he never broke ranks from what the CDC, FDA told him.
So he appealed to this authority, an authority right. that we already knew had not been honest, an authority right. that really didn't demand our respect. And it also it's an easy out because it does, again, because most of the world uses that logical fallacy of appealing to authority as a defense. And right. so
they put themselves and us in this horrible trap, and it's led to so many catastrophic results. Like we mentioned, the mandates and Dr. Dennis Prager's podcast this past week, I think it was episode 234. I would strongly encourage anybody to watch it, but they put themselves in a trap. How can they back away, be honest about the evidence, and say, we're going to change what we believe and think? Hopefully, good Lord willing, soon they will do so that we will start fulfilling the promise that America has. And that's not to be 18th highest mortality in the world from a virus. But it's going to require that type of humility, and they've got to start looking at the evidence that we're going to be going into more today and in the coming weeks and months, that they have been so derelict in rejecting honest evaluation and scientific method of developing courses of action that would help us all.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19. We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, And it's more natural, too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
So we are back. I've got Dr. Stuart Tankersley, and this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn. We are here on The Pulse. And one of the things that I want everyone to listen to real quick is get an idea of the individual that is about to be on news talking. You might recognize his voice about a certain product. And I want everybody to ask the question whether they think this is a public health official or this is a salesperson.
Says, why are traditional vaccines like the World Health Organization approved Covaxin, which has proven to be safe and effective in India and which appears to have the potential to be effective against new variants, being delayed for approval in the U.S.? We had so many people ask about Covaxin.
We have enough vaccines, the best vaccines available in the United States. So I don't see, really, I'm puzzled by that question. We have more vaccines than we need right now. We just need the people to get vaccinated with the vaccines that we have. The mRNA vaccines are vaccines that are desired by everyone else in the world. So we have what we need. We need to use it.
The big question I have after listening to that first is, does that sound like a public health official or a salesman? And the other question would be, if this person, who I will tell you now is Anthony Fauci, was concerned about the populace or the public health, and let's stipulate, as he obviously believes, that vaccines are the solution to this problem, let's stipulate also that there might be 30 million people that are avoiding the vaccine that is an mRNA genetic vaccine, but would be willing, let's say half those people would be willing to take a more, what I would call classical vaccine that has been developed by the Indians. And 15 of those million of those people would take this vaccine. What the heck is he talking about? Again, he's the person empowered with taking care of supposedly the public's health, and a vaccine that is available, that is safe, that is effective. I definitely think these vaccines, from what I've read, are definitely safer than the vaccines that he promulgates. But even if he thinks the mRNA vaccine is better, the fact that 30 million people won't take it doesn't change what he thinks is the benefit to those people to receive a vaccine, but they could receive a vaccine that they might take because it's, again, a classical vaccine without the questions that go along with the safety and efficacy of an mRNA new technology.
Not only the questions, but the proof.
The proof. No, I agree. So again, does that sound like a salesman, or does that sound like our public health official that is actually worried about us being saved from this disease? Or does it sound like somebody that thinks he's got the best product and only his product does? And I guess I'll ask the question to Stuart. I mean, if a patient comes in and has a disease, and that disease can be treated with four or five things, I may have one thing that I think's the best. But let's say that patient says, oh, I will never take that. But they might take the second or third best thing that I have in my toolbox. Do I just say, well, I can't give you anything? Or do I prescribe and give them access to the second or third thing?
Yeah, it's interesting. Clearly, in his response to the question, there was great frustration. He was very frustrated in his response. How dare you? I promise you, the frustration we have felt pales in comparison. His frustration pales in comparison to the obvious deception, cover-up, and inaccuracies that have been foisted and enforced on us as physicians and also our the community at large. Stop obfuscating. Stop selling us something, and let's go at the science. He never gets it. He never gets that choice. It's like finally the example of President Biden's son. The evidence was overwhelming. The FBI had the laptop a year before the elections, and then all of a sudden now they're going to take it seriously and maybe look at doing something about it.
And again, it goes back to the fact that it proves that he is someone that's not interested in the problem,
right?
But instead of pushing his solution.
Yep.
And so again, as it has been from day one, it leads people to be skeptical of their leaders. Because if their leader is not honest, if their leader is not addressing something that everybody should be addressing, which is COVID, not necessarily your solution for COVID, but instead bringing all the solutions to the table and then evaluating right. those solutions on their merits.
Right.
But he's already decided that this vaccine, by the way, the vaccine, again, this interview was only 3 months ago. This is a vaccine that he initially said wouldn't need a booster. He said it would prevent you from getting the disease. And again, now he's saying it's the envy of the world. I would beg to differ. That most of the world, most of the populace from China, India, to most of Asia, doesn't want our vaccines, doesn't want our mRNA products. They have their own product. And I would argue, and when you look at the Korean data of it head to head, these inactivated viral vaccines are safer and obviously proven historically in their safety. Now, again, every vaccine has its risk, but it's also, they appear to be much more effective in terms of creating cellular immunity versus just humoral immunity. And that's kind of a fancy word of saying making antibodies is humoral immunity, which wanes, as we've all found out, making cellular immunity would be having the blueprint your body needs to build the factory to fight the virus the second it encounters you.
Exactly. These different vaccines yield different results in our bodies that have been proven. For example, the lipid nanoparticle and the messenger RNA that causes our body to produce a lot more spike protein than that which we encounter if naturally infected is bizarre. If somebody would have taken the time out beforehand, before forcing this on us, there obviously seems like there was, but we have evidence that this was planned. All of this was planned with the patents that were applied for and received over the last 20 or more years. But that's not debatable. But if you look at it and step back away, it's not just the vaccine, the push for these new technology vaccines, but the absolute rejection of anything that they do not approve of for treating patients, even though they are very effective, certainly more effective than that remdesivir that these hospitals and the government and companies have made gazillions of dollars on. But it's just amazing that we have tolerated, and it goes back to why we've gotten in this position as a country to have allowed this to happen. And it's because we are a fearful faithless. We have faith drives out fear, fear drives out faith. And so we have revealed ourselves to be fearful. And that's what's allowed the abuse that's taken place upon us and keeps us at 18th highest mortality rate in the world.
And it also goes back to why, when we talk about problems and then the market's solutions, that just like the Soviet commissar failed, these men have biases, will have biases, as we all will have. And if they're in charge of picking the solution, whether that be the treatments, as we've seen with the lack of early treatment or rejecting ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine for remdesivir, if they get to pick the treatments as well as pick the vaccines, They're going to pick the ones that they like, and they're going to really market them on their own behalf, which is even more questionable. And so, again, we're not going to have solutions. The other question I would ask is, heck, Covaxin is an inactivated viral vaccine. It's been, you know, 2 years. Where's our inactivated viral vaccine? So, again, Tony Fauci has picked the horse. The problem is that horse is looking, I mean, it barely got out of the gates before it was hurting people, and it's definitely not going to finish. So the question would be, why are we still betting on the same horse in America? I thought we were the land of entrepreneurial and innovators and people who were, you know, individualistic, that were going to come up with multiple solutions to the same problem.
Yep, absolutely. So this closes out our time together again. Looking forward to next week and the coming weeks. And as you know, we're going to start branching out and with each week having guests join us that will give us further insight and views into why we are who we are in the worst catastrophe in our lifetime in our country. And hopefully encourage those that are listening to seek the truth. Don't allow the lies to trap you in fear. Fight for the reality that is being ignored or silenced. It's your responsibility as a free American to challenge the narratives, even when they're right, challenge them, but especially the lies that trap us in the fear we're in.
And I would say, even in medicine, when it doesn't pass the smell test, start looking. And I think a lot of us in the medical profession are encouraged by the fact that our patients have woken up to the fact that there's a lot to be found and a lot to be discovered about what your doctor says or what the public official on TV says. And my biggest challenge to y'all is go get your own information. I don't think that's not condescending to us as physicians. Do you think that is, Stuart? I think I value when people come, and what they provide for me is that they not only care about their own health, but as I actually have done a little footwork.
Yes, exactly. Unlike our fathers who in their time of training, 40, 50 years ago, maybe the idea was, you're the one responsible for your patients. You owe it to your patients to tell them what they have to do. We were trained in a different era where we come alongside our patients, and it's kind of a negotiation of how do you want to approach it together, which I think is healthier. But it does put responsibility on the patient, on the individual, as well as the professional physician to the provider to negotiate how they're going to approach the bigger problems that are causing so much damage. And that's our encouragement tonight, is please get involved, own your understanding of what's going on, and humble yourself to look at evidence you might not instinctively want to look at.
Yeah, I will tell you, I mean, if you look at the medical textbooks compared to my medical textbook versus my dad's medical textbook, the information out there is denser than ever before. And even the treatments that we might offer patients are more robust, probably in a lot of ways, can be more helpful, but with that always comes more risk. So you need to be your own advocate when we're talking about medical treatments. And so that's one thing that I will advise all the people listening to do that. And in all honesty, find a doctor who's fine with you doing that, because a lot of times it's helpful.
And you know, our profession for the last 70 years or more, it is absolutely bedrock principle number one. If you're going to experiment on a patient, if you're going to give them unproven treatment or options, you are going to inform them of potential downsides. Informed consent is at the heart of this relationship. if you're going to use something like an experimental agent. And that has been completely silenced and rejected. And
it's been turned on its head in the last 2 years. I would say that prior to 2 years ago, the what was drilled into us in medical school was the riskier, the more innovative, the newer therapies required complete understanding and complete in informing the patient of all the possibilities, all the unknowns.
Especially for children and pregnant women.
Heck, in medical research, if somebody didn't have a good grasp of the language that the informed consent, as well as the doctor doing the informed consent, that there was even a mild language barrier, they were not allowed in the study.
Right.
And now we have those same people showing up in parking lots, putting their arms out as the government gives them a shot.
And they partook in the same endeavor without informed consent themselves, which is just crazy. It's just amazing.
All right. Well, we are done for this afternoon. We thank you all for joining us. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. Have a good day.